so long. I watched him, captivated. I felt like I was getting an X-rated striptease from a glorious god. "You're the most beautiful thing on the planet, James," I told him. At the bottom of my vision, I saw his erection twitch, and he closed his eyes for a long moment. There was no denying that he was susceptible to flattery, but that wasn't why I'd said it. I'd said it because I couldn't look directly at the sun and not remark that it was blinding and brilliant. Once the scarf was free, he covered my eyes with it, wrapping it twice around my head. He raised my arms above my head, stretching them taut, his hard length rubbing along my torso as he did so. His cock pushed hard into my sternum as he wrapped the scarf around my arms. I gasped. He wrapped that soft length from my wrists to my elbows. It was a firm hold, but not tight. When that was secure, he wrapped it over my collarbone, lining it even with my underarms. He barely jostled me as he wrapped it around me twice there before moving down to my breasts and then ribs. He wrapped it around and around with smooth, sure motions, somehow managing to get it under my body while barely moving me. He wound it around my waist next, bringing it back up to wrap around both my eyes and arms, binding them together. He had me well and truly caught when he pulled back, straddling my hips. He said one word before he set to work on my body with his mouth. Struggle. I tested my restraints rather hesitantly at first, not imagining that the scarf would pose any real challenge. It was so soft, so stretchy. But the man knew what he was doing, always. I gasped as he licked a path down my navel to my inner thighs. He sucked at a tender spot while I worked against the scarf, making no progress, just moving the wicked thing against my body deliciously while he did even more delicious things down below. He worked that clever mouth from my groin to that sensitive spot behind my knee and back again. I struggled hard because it felt good, because I couldn't believe that the ridiculous scarf could hold me so securely, and because I wanted my hands free to push that teasing mouth where I needed it to be. I only succeeded in trapping myself more securely, and James took his sweet time moving that tongue just where I craved it. I stopped struggling when he finally buried his face between my legs, thrusting his tongue inside of me before licking up to my clit. He lifted his head as I stilled. "Keep struggling," he told me. I couldn't see a thing, but I could hear the wicked smile in his voice. He plunged two hard fingers inside of me, once, twice, and I came on a dime. He was kissing up my body, nudging aside the material where it covered a nipple. He sucked hard on my nipple as he plunged inside of me. I gasped and struggled harder against the soft bindings. He was dragging his cock out of me, hitting every perfect nerve when he uncovered my eyes. The rest he left imprisoned as he dug his elbows into the mattress on the sides of my breasts and drove into me again and again. His eyes showed me that the tender lover was driving for this ride, though the warm smile in his voice as he tormented me had given me fair warning. "Say it, Bianca," he said, his voice more tender than demanding. Still, I knew it was an order. "I'm yours, James," I told him softly. His eyelids fluttered briefly as he started to come inside of me. He bottomed out in me with the sexiest little moan, and I came. "Cashmere fucking," he told me with a smile as we caught our breath. I laughed. "So that's what that was called. Good to know." He unwrapped me from the long scarf slowly, rubbing it along my body as he did so. I rubbed against him, always craving his touch, even as my eyes drifted closed, and I fell into a hard sleep. I had the dream again, and woke up scrambling out of bed in the dark, disoriented and scared. Hard, familiar arms caught me almost immediately, lifting me from behind and carrying me into the bathroom. I had to shut my eyes tight as light flooded the room. We were already naked, so he just stepped into the tub, never letting me go as he turned on the water and leaned back against the edge of the huge tub. I turned into him, wrapping my arms around his neck, clinging as hard as I could. Soothing arms stroked my back, washing and comforting, soft whispers telling me everything would be fine. I can't stand it. I know it's a dream, but it feels so real, I whispered. I didn't break down, didn't cry this time, though the dream had shaken me just as badly as before. More so.
Shh, love, just breathe. The memories will fade. Nightmare memories always do.
He said it like someone well acquainted with nightmares. I wasn't surprised. I lifted my head to look at him. He stroked my hair, meeting my eyes squarely. He could communicate so much to me with just those exquisite, tarnished eyes of his. I swallowed hard. Residual fear from the dream still haunted me. The thought of losing him made me desperate and empty and filled me with despair darker than anything I'd ever known, and I was hardly a stranger to dark thoughts. I pulled back enough to move up his body, straddling his hips in the rising water. I traced a finger over that smooth brow, the hollow in his cheek, that perfectly straight nose, those pretty lips, and then across that hard jaw. I cupped his face in my hands, watching him steadily. He pressed his own hands over mine, giving me such a loving look that I melted. "The thought of losing you makes me desperate," I said, shifting our faces closer. My eyes were steady on his when I took the leap. "I love you, James," I said, my voice just a whisper. "So much." His eyes closed for just an instant, and he took a deep breath. When he opened them again, there was such a raw relief there that it made me shake.
"Thank you," he said roughly. "I've been waiting for that and wanting that for so long."
He stroked his hands over my hair, watching me, his eyes going to that soft, loving place that I'd come to crave and depend on so quickly. He was silent for so long, just watching me and touching me, that I lost our silent standoff. "Do you love me?" I asked him, my chest hurting.
"That's a silly question," he said, stroking my cheek. "An unnecessary question. I've never made a secret of my feelings, Bianca. I know you're a skeptic, but you must have realized that I fell for you right away."
I leaned my cheek into his hand. "Why haven't you ever said the words, then?" He bit his lip. I watched that vulnerable action with rapt attention.
"I wanted you to say it first. Not for pride and not for my ego, but for my heart. I haven't said those words to anyone since my parents died, and I didn't want the first time to be met with a rejection. I was afraid you would get spooked and run again. I preferred to give you time rather than break my own heart. Can you understand that?"
I nodded, feeling crushed under the weight of my own skepticism. I hated what my baggage had done to him, what it might do in the future, all of the pain it had caused him because there was no cure-all for my issues. One big one was rearing its ugly head even as I had the thought. "But why?" I asked him, my voice much smaller than I liked it to be. "That's what I don't understand." His brows shot up, and he gave me a genuinely baffled look.
"Why?
Why do you love me?" His eyes got so soft, changed in an instant from confused and into that impossibly tender look that got me every time.
"You want me to break it down for you?" he asked succinctly.
I nodded. He traced a finger across my brow.
"I can do that. I'd enjoy that, actually. You're my favorite subject, love. I'll start with your eyes. I fell in love with those first. One look was like a punch to the gut. You have these ageless eyes on such a young face. I just knew that you had seen bad things, lived bad things, and from the start, I knew that you could understand pain, understand loneliness and despair, understand feeling hopeless and helpless and alone. I fell in love with your eyes first because I looked into their depths and saw the other half of my soul. That got to me, and my eyes filled with those humiliating tears that I couldn't seem to avoid lately.
He traced a tear down my face, giving me his fondest smile.
I freely admit that was enough to catch me, and you're going to tell me I'm crazy, but I've been around the block too many times to count, and I was experienced enough to know right from that first meeting that I was falling for you. I didn't understand it until after our first time together, wouldn't have given it that name, but that doesn't change the fact that I was lost from then on. But let's get back to my favorite subject.
He reached across the tub, turning the water off. He plunged that hand back into my hair to cup the back of my head.
Next, I fell for that hard-won composure of yours, that steely self-control. When I got you to smile at me, or even to acknowledge my presence, it felt like an accomplishment. I've never needed the chase, never wanted it, really, but I relished it with you, even knowing that it was trouble for me, that you were trouble. Next, let me see. That's harder to pin down because that was a lot of things at once. I'll lump it all together and say that I fell for your reaction to me next. Your submission. I've never felt anything like this kind of chemistry before. The way you tremble at my touch. That innocent response that you couldn't hide and that I couldn't doubt. And then we made love. After that, I couldn't call what I felt for you anything but love. Not to myself. Even knowing that you didn't feel the same. At least not like I did. Not yet.
There was such an adoring sort of understanding in his eyes that I felt something raw heal inside of me. Yes, my natural skepticism had hurt him, but at least he seemed to get why I was this way. He seemed to get me.
He wasn't done. And then there were your paintings. Those dreams in your eyes. The world cannot have been a beautiful place for you, but it becomes so beautiful through those paintings of yours. You put your soul into those paintings, and nothing in this world is more beautiful to me than that soul of yours.
I had always been uncomfortable with praise, any kind of praise, and his outpouring was in a league of its own as far as compliments that moved me went. I felt so overwhelmed that it was hard to keep looking directly at him, deep into those tarnished turquoise depths. But I managed it through sheer force of will, my whole body trembling with the effort. He continued relentlessly.
And then there's the fact that you're stunningly beautiful, and you could care less about it. Your beauty devastates me, Bianca. Yet you put less value on that beauty than any woman I've ever met. Even if you realized just how stunning you are, which I know you don't, it wouldn't matter to you. Wouldn't make any difference at all. And I find that so charming about you. Sometimes I feel like I've made a muddle of it all, he continued, like all I do is screw up, but I swear to you that I'm trying my best. I'm only terrible at this relationship thing because I've never done it before. But I promise I'll keep working until I get it right. I'm nothing if not determined.
The thought floored me. I spoke without thinking. Now, that's a depressing thought, James, because if you're terrible at this, there isn't even a word to describe how much I suck at it.
He threw back his head and laughed,
and my mouth moved into a smile automatically. He brought his laughing lips close to mine.
Not true, love. You're doing perfect as far as I'm concerned.
His mouth was a whisper away from mine when I spoke. You haven't made a muddle of it, James. You couldn't be terrible at anything, even if you tried. I think you're perfect. He kissed me, a kiss that started out soft, but as always, our unquenchable hunger for each other quickly took it further. He was gripping my hair and plundering my mouth within hot, drugging moments. I rubbed my wet chest against his. We made love slowly, leisurely, lovingly. I lay my cheek against his wet chest when we finished, kissing my crimson name on his pounding heart. He stroked my hair for long minutes, still buried inside of me. He seemed in no hurry to pull out.
I love you, Bianca, he said very quietly. There isn't a thing about you that I don't adore. Even the things that have made it hard for you to let me in hold a special place in my heart. I never thought I'd meet a woman that I couldn't doubt, a person that I could so easily give my trust to. But I know your soul, and it is so pure and clear to me that I feel like I can see right into it. I didn't know how he could say that. I felt so cynical sometimes, but I soaked up his words, loving the way they made me feel. I didn't have to agree with the words to be touched by them. I love you, I told him simply. We were silent for long minutes, communicating only through stroking touches and soft kisses. Eventually, reluctantly, he pulled slowly out of me, pulling me flush against him right away.
"Can I tell you about my parents?" he asked finally.
"Of course," I said quickly, surprised that he thought he had to ask. "I would love to hear about them. I love to learn about you."
"You would have liked my mother. She was so passionate, so opinionated, but also kind. She didn't come from my father's world, but she didn't put up with any of the nonsense that the high society set tried to throw her way. She hated luncheons and teas. Hell, she hated all of the insufferable social functions that weren't directly helping a charity, and the term socialite made her see red."
His words brought me a staggering sense of relief. If he had expected me to do what Jackie suggested and devote my life to a pointless string of unenjoyable social functions just for the sake of keeping up appearances, I would have been troubled, because that just wasn't for me.
She kept a few close friends very close, and devoted her time to her family and to her charities. She was so beautiful.
He paused, stroking my cheek.
My father was a reserved man, but he was loving. I do remember that. He worked a lot, but when he didn't, he devoted his time to my mother and me. He worshipped the ground she walked on.
He stroked my hair when he said it, his eyes loving.
They had a good marriage. I was young, but even I could see how devoted they were to each other. They would share these looks. Even as a child, I knew that they had something special. As I got older, long after they'd passed, I didn't imagine I could ever find something similar for myself, that I could ever feel something like what they had. I honestly didn't think I was capable of it until I met you. I didn't know I had those kinds of feelings inside of me. Now, I see clearly that with the right person, it's so simple. Those feelings aren't something one can force, and they aren't something I could deny once I felt them. It still just floors me that I felt them so fast and so deep with you. My father liked to claim that he fell in love with my mother at first sight. Even back then, I thought he was just waxing poetic. But I believe him now. I did exactly the same thing.
I looked up at him. You're insane, I told him. The idea of love at first sight was just so far-fetched, especially since it was me he was talking about. But undeniably, terribly romantic, I allowed. He just smiled.
I know. But I'm honest, and that's just how it was for me.
I rubbed my cheek against his chest, feeling like this was all a dream. He was just too perfect to be real.
Chapter 15. Mr. Dubious. We slept in late the next morning. I was pleasantly surprised that James had taken the morning off so we could spend the morning together before I had to fly out. I would only be gone for the day, arriving back in New York early in the morning the next day, but it still felt like such a treat to get more time with him. We lingered in bed, which was hardly surprising since I woke up as he was pushing himself inside of me. He must have been at it for a while because I was wet enough that my body accepted him easily. He held my legs so far apart that the stretch bordered on painful and pounded into me mercilessly, his eyes snapping at me all the while.
"Say it, Bianca," he said roughly.
I wasn't exactly sure which "it" he meant after our confessions from the night before, so I went with my instincts. He was fucking me like he wanted to own me, so I said what came to mind.
"I'm yours, Mr. Cavendish. Only yours."
I found out that my instincts were right on as he came inside of me, shouting my name roughly. I was right there with him, watching him with fascination and love as my body clenched deliciously around him in a perfect orgasm. He was tender afterwards, but it was a possessive sort of tender. We showered, and he took over completely, washing my body and hair like it was his custom. I was beyond questioning it. Letting him care for me like that fulfilled a need in both of us, and now I only cherished it as he cherished me. He dressed me, placing soft kisses all over my body right before he covered each spot with clothes. I ran hungry hands through his wet hair as he tended to me. He dressed me in a dark t-shirt and boxers because I would have to get dressed again in work clothes in just a few hours. We went downstairs for breakfast. It would have been tempting to have breakfast in bed that morning, but I was dying to see Stefan. I needed to make sure he was okay, so we headed to the dining room to eat. James didn't even ask me. He seemed to always understand how Stefan and I worked. I didn't know if he was just that observant, or if Stefan had explained it to him in even more detail than what I'd imparted. The how didn't matter, though, because it was only his understanding that was crucial. I felt my whole body get a little limp with relief when I heard laughter coming from the dining room as we approached. I recognized Javier's laugh first, and the one that joined it was one that was more familiar to me than my own laugh, and more welcome. I smiled at the sound, my step quickening to reach them. James was a silent presence at my back. Stefan stood when he saw me, grinning ear to ear. He was across the room and enfolding me into his arms in a flash. I burrowed into that familiar chest. "Are you okay?" I asked him. He squeezed me tight. "I'm great." "I take it you guys worked it out?" I said wryly. "We did." No hesitation. I nodded against him, and after a moment, he let me go to get back to his breakfast. I didn't need to know any more than that. He'd made up his mind, and I could only hope that Javier, who was giving me very cautious glances, wouldn't hurt him again. James pulled my chair out for me, acting like a gentleman.
"Egg white omelet okay with you?"
he asked me, heading into the kitchen. I nodded, wondering what about me had attracted what seemed to be the last two gentlemen left on the planet. I noticed that Stefan and Javier were eating crepes covered in syrup, whipped cream, and chocolate chips. I was surprised that James even kept the ingredients for that in his house. James returned quickly, carrying a very English tea service. He served us all tea, acting the epitome of the well-mannered English host. I told him so. He smiled. I get it from my father. English from head to toe. Every cup of English tea that I drink makes me think of him. I thought that was a sweet thing for him to share, and I gave him a sweet smile. He winked at me. I was startled at the response it caused in me. It was a pretty innocent gesture considering the things he said and did to me on a daily basis, but it still had me turned on in a heartbeat. The man was hot. We were almost through with our breakfast when I noticed James checking his phone, his expression growing carefully blank from one second to the next. "Excuse me," he said curtly. He rose from the table and strode from the room. I hadn't realized how polite he usually was about taking calls during our time together simply because he didn't do it, which made me even more curious about what had gotten his attention and what had put that look on his face. I was on instant alert. A rare streak of uncontrollable curiosity had me following him within seconds. I wanted to see what had troubled him so badly with just a few words. I caught him with his back to me in one of the sitting rooms. The door wasn't completely closed, but he was speaking very quietly into the phone. "Then offer them more. I mean it when I say I don't have a limit to what I will pay to keep this from getting out." He paused. "I don't give a fuck if it's a smart business decision, Roger. This isn't about business. This is about keeping my life intact, the way I need for it to be, and I don't give a fuck if it takes my fortune to accomplish that. Do you understand?" Another long pause. "I am not a 14-year-old that you are managing, Roger. I don't need time to think. I need you to do what I'm asking you to do. Take care of this." Fear froze me in my tracks, and I stood in the doorway, listening. His tone was so panicked, so desperate. I did not want to know what had put the fear in him. I didn't move from the doorway as he ended the call and turned. I had been eavesdropping on him, and I'd just as soon have him know it. Perhaps he would tell me what had happened, and it wouldn't be as bad as the dread coursing through me was telling me it was. He flinched when he saw me standing there, and that was so not good for my peace of mind. We suffered through a very long, awkward silence while he rubbed his temples, and I watched him. "Everything okay?" I finally asked him. He grimaced.
"It will be," he said. That was all.
"Who is Roger?" I asked. Being with James seemed to have added Nosy quite firmly into my list of character flaws.
"An old family friend, a sort of mentor to me, and my lawyer."
I thought that sounded ominous, but he didn't elaborate, and I didn't ask him to. If he didn't want to share, I couldn't make him. He moved to me finally. He ran a hand over my hair, grabbing it firmly at my nape. He used it like a handle to tilt my face up to him. There was trouble in his eyes.
"Did you mean what you said last night?"
I studied him, beyond confused. "About what?" His jaw clenched, and he watched me for a long time.
"About loving me. I know you were tired and scared from the nightmare.
I couldn't take it." I interrupted him rudely. "Of course I did. I wouldn't say something like that just because I was tired."
"Say it again," he ordered roughly.
"I love you. Of course I do. You shouldn't doubt me. I wouldn't say it unless I meant it."
"How conditional is that love? How much are you willing to withstand just to stay with me?"
I was starting to get angry. "I don't like the question. Love in a monogamous relationship has to have some conditions, James. If you were unfaithful..."
"I'm not talking about that. I'd never do that. Does your love have other conditions?"
I glared at him, but I shook my head, finding the answer way too quickly. I don't think that it does, James, but again, I don't like the question. Do you want to tell me why you're asking it? He was gripping my hair to the point of pain now.
I'm asking it because every time that I think we're on our way to building a future together, something from the past gets in the way, and I need to know that won't happen to us again.
I thought he was being deliberately vague, but I let it go. I was in no mood to open Pandora's box. The past can only hurt us if we let it, if it really is the past that we're talking about. He studied me, then kissed me roughly. He brought his mouth to my ear.
I want to tie you to my bed now. I want to keep you there.
My brain short-circuited for an instant, going to that sublime place that only James could take me to. I need to leave for the airport soon.
I know. That's why I want to do it. So you can't leave.
I tried to meet his eyes to give him an exasperated look, but he was kissing me, invading my mouth until I forgot why what he'd said was so outrageous. I pulled back only when he'd left me breathless and wanting.
Have you given any thought to your painting career? He demanded. When would you like to start planning your first showing?
I had, in fact, been thinking about it. It was a persistent sort of distraction in my brain, especially when I considered that James currently paid much more to have me followed and protected on flights than I was actually earning on those flights. It seemed so wasteful and senseless. I have, I admitted. His jaw clenched when I didn't elaborate.
And what are your thoughts?
I gave him my little shrug. I'm mulling it over. He gave me a rather pained smile.
Well, you let me know when you're done mulling, he bit out. I would love to know your thoughts on the matter.
He was obviously upset, but he dropped it after that. We made our way upstairs. I put on my uniform while he put on his ungodly expensive suit. He was ready first, taking another mysterious phone call. He strode from the room, phone to his ear, while I put on a bit of makeup. He was quiet and a little distant on the drive to the airport. He kept me close, a hand in my hair and the other on my knee. The distance was all in his eyes and his expression, which had been very carefully blank since that second phone call. He only came to life briefly when we reached the airport and it was time to say goodbye. He let the guys file out before crushing his mouth against mine. His kiss was hungry and desperate. We were both breathless and agitated when he pulled back.
"Are you okay?" I asked him.
He nodded, but that trouble hadn't left his eyes.
"Bye," I told him.
He got out first to hand me out.
"I love you, Bianca," he said.
I nodded. "I love you too, James," I said steadily. I didn't even feel the need to panic or withdraw at the words. They already came easily to my lips. I had it so bad. Stefan and Javier and I were lucky to get a row of seats together for the flight since we were flying space available. We all tried to sleep since we'd be working well into the next morning, but I didn't think any of us got more than a one-hour nap on the 4.5-hour flight. I woke up from my nap as the plane began to descend for landing, the feeling familiar enough to act like an alarm on my body. My head was pillowed against Stefan's shoulder. I rubbed my cheek against that supple muscle before pulling back to look at him. His arms were crossed over his chest, making his muscles bulge attractively. He was smiling and awake. He looked as happy as I'd ever seen him. It was a good sight for my heart, especially after all of the drama from the night before. I saw that Javier was still passed out, his head pillowed onto Stefan's other shoulder. "Morning, Buttercup," Stefan said softly. "Just sitting here smiling while we sleep on you?" I asked him with a smile. He flashed a dimple at me, nodding.
"Sandwiched by my two favorite people in the world. What's not to smile about?"
I had to laugh.
"So, what happened last night?" I asked him. I didn't want to ruin the mood, but I needed to know.
That had been a lot of drama to be squashed so easily.
"Javier said he loves me," he said with a very soft smile. I was relieved and confused all at once. "What about before that?"
He grimaced and told me briefly about Vance and the way he'd bullied Javier. I gripped his hand when he'd finished. I wasn't sure what to think about all of it. Javier did have a reputation for loving drama, but on the other hand, I'd met Vance, and that one lived and breathed the stuff. I did know one thing, though. Stefan believed Javier with a certainty, and he would feel horrible for not defending the other man, instead walking away when he was being harassed.
"If that was what really happened, you couldn't have known."
Stefan gave me a stern look.
"You don't believe that's what happened?"
I gave him my little shrug.
"You know I'm more cynical than you. I don't know what to believe, but, of course, I have my doubts.
That doesn't matter, though. If you're together, I support that, because it's what you want."
He gave me a sad smile.
"You shouldn't be so cynical. I have no doubts about Javier, Bianca."
I nodded, watching him carefully. "I know. And, like I said, that's enough for me."
"When are you going to learn that I'm not the only trustworthy person in the world?"
I didn't have an answer for that, at least not one that he wanted to hear. Nothing but time and consistency would make me trust Javier with Stefan's heart, and the drama of the night before had done nothing but set that time further back, whatever his story was.
"You don't think he's good enough for me," he said, clear reproof in his voice. I had to smile at that.
"I don't think anyone is good enough for you, myself included." He just shook his head. We'd been over this, and neither of us ever budged.
"I told James that I love him," I told him quietly. I heard the familiar sound of wheels coming down from the plane. I was surprised that Javier was still sleeping peacefully.
Stefan beamed at me.
"That's wonderful. Your therapist would be proud."
I laughed, hardly offended since he only spoke the truth.
"Are you going to ask me what he said?" I asked him.
He shook his head without hesitation.
"He's been head over heels from the start, Buttercup. I had no doubts. That man worships the ground you walk on."
Chapter 16. Mr. Callis. We had almost no downtime once we got to Las Vegas. Javier and Stefan said a quick and circumspect goodbye, though I could practically see the heat snapping between them. We shuttled to our airline's headquarters, checked in, and prepped for our flight, though that entire process was hardly uneventful. All of the other crews that we greeted were abuzz with the recent announcement that our airline had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. We were still in business for the moment, but speculation as to what that meant for us was running rampant. I was mostly in shock about the whole thing. Stefan and I shared a very long look that meant we would talk about it later. The shuttle we took back to the airport was so loud with everyone voicing opinions and fears that we couldn't have heard each other over the noise if we'd tried. I texted James.
"Bianca, did you hear the news about the airline?"
"James, yes. Can you talk on the phone right now?"
"Bianca, it's too loud on the bus. I'll call you from the plane."
I had a few brief minutes to call him once we got to the plane, between prep time and boarding. He was very much Mr. Cavendish when he answered the phone.
"Hello, Bianca."
"Hello, Mr. Cavendish," I said, because I knew who I was talking to. "What do you think of all this bankruptcy stuff? I don't know what any of it means. It sounds really bad, but people are saying we could still stay in business." I heard his audible sigh over the line. It didn't bode well.
"If you want my candid professional opinion on the matter, what it means is that the airline will stay in business for around a year before its fleet of aircrafts will be grounded for good. Your CEO has exhausted literally every avenue of funding at his disposal, gone to every connection, large and small, that he has. He refuses to give up control of the airline, and he's never run one successfully, though he has tried several times. He approached me about funding, which is actually why I was on the flight where I met you, but I had to decline based solely on the fact that it would have been a disastrous business decision for me. He was not willing to make any leadership concessions, and I wasn't willing to throw $100 million away on a man with a clear history of failure. In the near future," he continued relentlessly, "say, the next days and weeks, you will most likely be given an option for a voluntary furlough, and if that fails to yield enough willing candidates, an involuntary one. The airline will be cutting costs and staffing. Any routes that aren't profitable will be aborted within the next month. Any other questions?" I felt deflated by his revelations, though I didn't doubt for a second that he knew what he was talking about. "Did you know all along that this was going to happen?" "Yes," he said with no hesitation. "It was all only a countdown. The airline has been hemorrhaging money from the start. This is the era of discount fares, and your airline was a startup luxury carrier. Everyone in the industry is just surprised that it lasted this long. Have you given any more thought to your painting career? Just say the word, and I'll have my people prepare your showing."
I thought that was rather callous of him. Of the two of us, I thought I had the monopoly on being insensitive. "I have not," I told him, my voice stiff. "I haven't had time to process any of this." There was a long pause on the other end.
"Well, I will leave you to it, then. I need to go. I'll see you in the morning."
"Goodbye, Mr. Cavendish," I said coldly, wondering at his mood. When I had called him, I hadn't expected to talk to this callous man.
"Goodbye, Bianca."
I hung up, feeling a little stung at his cold manner. Was my hesitation about showing my paintings really bothering him this much? Or was it something else? Whatever was going on with Roger, perhaps? I knew speculating was pointless, so I got to work. It bothered me persistently, though. Not knowing the cause for his distant demeanor left my mind free to run wild with possibilities and paranoid fears, each one more alarming than the last. I tried my hardest to distract myself for the duration of the flight. It was at least full, my bodyguards in each cabin included, of course. Even full, though, I was left with nothing to do by halfway into the flight. Damien and Murphy had been uncharacteristically quiet for the pre-board procedures and the flight. I knew they must be upset about the bad news. If they started at another airline, they likely wouldn't get to work together for years. Damien would probably be demoted to the first officer position, making it impossible for them to work the same flights. Even after he made captain again, it would take time for them to get enough seniority to get regular routes, let alone routes together. I was sad for them. They made such a fun team. I visited with them in the flight deck for a while. They still joked non-stop and went to great efforts to charm me, but I sensed an undercurrent of tension in the two men. This was what upset me most about the collapse of my airline. It wasn't so much my future that I feared for. I liked my job, and I was grateful for the opportunities it had given me, but I was a survivor. Even without James, I would find another way to get by. But the people who had put all of their hopes into the airline for 4.5 years, the ones who would be most affected by it, that's what got me. businessmen played with their monopoly money while the rest of us rolled with the punches. It made me angry. Of course, there was nothing to do for any of it, so it was a futile kind of anger. I had a long talk with Stefan on the flight about the expected voluntary furlough. I made a quick but tough decision about it. I broached the subject with trepidation, but as usual, Stefan only responded with his unconditional support. He just cupped my shoulders in his big, gentle hands, giving me his best smile. "I think that makes perfect sense, Bianca. You were dreading telling me, weren't you?" I nodded. He kissed my forehead. "You should know better," he scolded softly. He was right. God, I loved him. How did I get so lucky? I was tired and exhausted by the time we got to New York, my mind running me ragged with all of the imminent changes in my life. Just when I made one huge change, didn't it just figure that it would all have to start changing? I wasn't sure what the plan was when we walked as a crew out to the pickup spot. James, or rather, cold Mr. Cavendish, hadn't said. I figured if he'd sent a car, I'd take it. If not, I'd go to the hotel with the crew. He had sent a car. In fact, he'd sent himself, I realized as he met me at the door, taking my bag and my arm without a word. His face was a beautiful mask, his eyes a little blank. James nodded stiffly at Stefan. Stefan had to stay with the crew for the hotel check-in, so he kissed me on the forehead and said goodbye. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to anyone else, since James was leading me away as soon as he had Stefan's assumed blessing. He handed my bags off to Clark, handing me into the car swiftly. My security detail filed into the car mere moments after James and I were settled. They'd been my silent shadow for the duration of my commute and workday. "Bodyguards are unnecessary when I'm working, James," I told him, my voice pitched low to keep the conversation private. "I'm quite safe at work." He looked at me. It was the first direct look he'd given me since he'd met me at the door. His face was as unreadable as I'd ever seen it. "I find it very necessary," he said shortly. He looked out the window. I hated this mood, hated this distance, but it still made me want to cling to him. I knew how unhealthy that urge was, and I tried my best to squelch it. Still, I found my hand seeking his knee, rubbing it comfortingly. It did not have the intended effect. His hand covered mine instantly, pushing it hard to his leg. I couldn't have pulled it away if I'd tried. "You in the mood to be pinned to the seat and fucked with an audience, love?" he said, his voice soft with danger. I tried to snatch my hand away, but he held it fast. I didn't answer the ridiculous question, and he didn't say another word, looking out the window, a storm in his eyes. "Are you going to tell me what's going on with you?" I finally asked him quietly. He squeezed my hand, his jaw working. "Bear with me, Bianca. I'm going through some rather trying legal issues, and letting you leave me every week tests every last ounce of my self-control." I was silent for a long time, debating if I should tell him about my decision. It seemed rather like rewarding his bad behavior just then, but I had already made up my mind. It just made sense, as much as I hadn't wanted it to. The voluntary furlough for flight attendants had already been announced. I'd received the email as we were taxiing into JFK. I had enough seniority to keep working, even if there weren't enough people to sign up for the voluntary furlough, and it became involuntary. But I saw that as such a selfish thing. I didn't need the job, not as much as so many others did. Perhaps there had only ever been this solution. The bankruptcy was just forcing my hand more quickly. I suspected that might be the case, but it didn't really matter anymore. "I'll be taking the voluntary furlough," I told him. I saw his hand shake with a fine tremor.
He didn't look at me. I understood that he didn't appreciate that we weren't alone just then.
"Thank you," he said very quietly, in an unsteady voice.
"I'm doing it because I feel ridiculous having more money spent to protect me at work than what I'm actually making. And because there are people that need the job more than I do," I told him, my tone hard. This was not because of his tantrum. "And I would like to begin planning the gallery showing." He nodded, head still turned away.
"Of course. Thank you. I'll set up a meeting for you with Danica when we're in Vegas. She manages both my L.A. and Las Vegas galleries. She went to bat against my New York team to get your work in her gallery. She's quite a fan."
I had a hard time believing that. The idea of having fans was too far-fetched of a concept for me to grasp easily. We arrived at our place via the underground garage, and James walked me into the apartment and up to our room. He watched me from the doorway of the closet as I got undressed for my nap.
"I can't linger. I really do need to get back to the hotel since I'll be heading back to Las Vegas with you tomorrow."
I just nodded, half undressed, my back to him. I felt him watching me for long minutes before he left. I got ready for bed and lay down to sleep, but it eluded me for a long time. The way James was acting filled me with tension and anxiety. I tried to tell myself that he was just a moody and unpredictable man. That was one of the first things I'd learned about him. But I knew, deep down in my gut, that it was something bad, something that he felt threatened him, or perhaps threatened us. He had told Roger to offer his entire fortune to protect from this mysterious threat, and I knew that he wouldn't use those words lightly. My phone woke me, and even as I answered it, I knew I'd overslept. I had that groggy feeling that I only got when I took too long of a nap.
"Buttercup, you coming out with us tonight?" Stefan asked.
I blinked awake. "Who is us, and where are you going?"
"The crew is going to Red with the other two crews that are here on a layover. They're driving into the city from the airport hotels. A few extra people are coming into town as well. I talked Javier, Jessa, Marnie, and Judith into flying in for the night. Our morning flight has likely 30 open seats, so they'll have no problem flying home with us. It's turned into kind of a bankruptcy party. I talked to James. He said that people could crash at your place and at his hotel. He's even setting up a VIP section at Red for us. He was supposed to tell you about it, but I guess you were sleeping."
I had to smile a little at Stefan turning a bankruptcy into a party, but hell, why not? "We all have to get up so early in the morning," I told him. "It wouldn't do at all to have a bunch of no-shows in the morning."
"It's fine. It's not like we do this often. Everyone just really needs to blow off steam."
I well understood. I felt the same urge. "What time do I need to be there?"
He laughed. "In an hour. Get a move on, Buttercup."
I did, showering, blow-drying my hair, and getting my makeup on in record time. There was a food tray set just inside my bedroom door when I came out of the bathroom. I ate the turkey burger on wheat quickly, impressed with Marion's efficiency. It was good, stacked with fresh vegetables, a spicy guacamole sauce giving it flavor. Either I was getting used to the fanatically healthy menu, or Marion was especially talented at making healthy taste good. I cleared my plate in minutes, rushing to get ready. I wore red. It seemed appropriate for the venue, and I loved the little dress. It draped over one shoulder, leaving the other bare, and the way it hung flattered my figure. It set off my collar just right, and I found the diamond cuffs on my jewelry vanity, which went perfectly. I wore diamond hoops in my ears as well, which may have been overkill, but why not? I had a whole team of bodyguards to keep me from getting robbed. Jackie's system pointed me in the direction of some nude heels with a red sole. These ones came with a note.
This dress needs stilettos. Please, I am begging you to change your mind on the wedge stance. Jackie. The note made me laugh. I was almost beginning to enjoy tormenting that strange woman. I knew some fashionistas, but she took it to a whole new level. The idea that she had chosen every outfit, shoe, and bag so carefully, and then apparently left notes on some of them, just cracked me up. I took the little yellow note to the bag closet and grabbed the tiny nude clutch with the matching number. At least it had a long strap. I sent out a few texts before I went downstairs. The first one went to James. Bianca, I'm going to Red for Stefan's party. Will I see you there? He responded quickly but shortly. James, you will. Cryptic man. The second text went to the security contact on my phone. I wasn't sure what the protocol was, but I'd prefer to keep them informed of my actions, as opposed to having them just wait for me at all hours. Bianca, I'm going out, heading downstairs now. The response came back in under a minute. Security, Roger that. I thought that was an odd text response, but I just went downstairs. Blake was waiting for me, wearing a black suit and looking as severe as always. I nodded at her. She nodded back. The others are waiting for us downstairs, Miss Carlson. We got into the elevator. You know, you don't have to call me that, I told her. It was worth at least one try. She looked startled. Of course, Mrs. Cavendish. I slapped my hand to my forehead, literally. Don't call me that. Call me Bianca. That's against my orders, Mrs. Cavendish. Hand to the forehead, again. Okay, call me Miss Carlson then, please. Of course, Miss Carlson. I wouldn't be trying that again. I had most definitely learned my lesson. I was flanked by the rest of my security the second we stepped into the lobby of the Swank building. I had the surreal realization as we walked through that lobby that all of the rich people were watching me, as though I was a person of note. I supposed having a team of bodyguards would do that for anyone. Johnny walked slightly in front of me and to my left. He shot me a rather familiar glance over his shoulder, very obviously eyeing up my legs. I blinked slowly, a little shocked that James wasn't just being crazy possessive about the Johnny issue. That had definitely been a look, and he couldn't be guarding me that well if he was that distracted.
"Looking hot, Miss Carlson," he said under his breath, reaffirming my opinion.
"And the point goes to Crazy Cavendish," I thought. Chapter 17. Mr. Controlling. Blake and Williams rode in the passenger cab of the limo with me, John and Henry up front. It was a very short drive. I got the VIP treatment from the car to the club, being ushered in without a soul even trying to make eye contact with me. I even got a little perfunctory bow from the bouncer. Being the owner's girlfriend had some bizarre little perks. I was led to a VIP section that was already packed with familiar faces. The party was well underway. A loud shout went out from the crowd when they spotted me. I had to smile. "You guys been at it for that long already?" I asked as Marnie and Judith rushed me, nearly spilling their red martinis in the process. I got side hugs on account of their drinks. Jessa was right on their heels. We all laughed as we realized that we were all wearing different shades of red. "I heard the name of the place, and it just seemed like a good idea," Jessa said, laughing. She swept a hand down her red halter dress as she spoke. She had a spectacular figure, with long legs, a small waist, and high breasts. Judith was wearing a red miniskirt with a white off-the-shoulder top. Marnie, a black skirt with a red ruffled blouse. They had planned it, of course, and wore matching red heels.
This place is luxe. I can't believe we got VIP here without having to blow anybody,
Marnie shouted over the noise. She came off a little louder than I think she intended because she got several looks from the various crews for that one. One of those looks was from Jessa.
Really, Marnie? Do you always have to go there? She asked, laughing.
Marnie shrugged, her cute nose wrinkling.
I never said I was a classy chick. Far from it. Judith is the classy one in our duo.
Judith raised her brows.
Now how damn sad is that?
I felt a hard chest press against my back, but I didn't stiffen or draw away. I knew the height and feel of that chest just perfectly. It used to sleep against my back when we'd huddled together for comfort, safety, and warmth. Stefan wrapped his arms around me, kissing the top of my head.
Glad you came, Bea. It's never the same without you.
I smiled, turning my head to look at him.
I feel the same, Steph.
As though reading my mind, he bent so I could kiss his cheek.
Where's Javier?
I asked as he pulled back, looking around for the other man.
Bathroom, he said, moving away.
He had to do some mingling, I knew. That was just how he operated.
I heard about the drama with Vance last night, Jessa said after he walked away. Rumor is he and Javier were making out in a bathroom.
I grimaced. I'm not surprised that's the rumor. Javier's side is different. He says that Vance pushed him against the wall and started kissing him. According to Javier, Vance just pushes him around like that to try to get a reaction, and Javier didn't push him away because he's learned that the best way to deal with Vance is not to react.
Jessa nodded, pursing her lips.
I've seen Vance do that. He's still crazy, stupid in love with Javier. He's been pushing him around like that for years. Vance needs to move on.
She shot a strangely malevolent look Damien's way. Kind of like a certain stubborn pilot, I know. I shot a look at Damien myself. Jessa definitely had a point there.
I believe Javier, Judith said loudly. I've seen how Vance treats him. He does crazy shit just hoping to make Javier snap.
I've seen it too. He wouldn't stop touching him at a party last year, even though Javier was clearly telling him to back off. Finally, Javier slapped him across the face, and I'd swear that made Vance happy from the look on his face when it happened.
I felt a wave of relief at their reaffirmation. I really did want to believe Javier's side of it. Wanting and believing were just two different things, unfortunately. Still, their words gave me hope that Javier wasn't just playing the drama game with Stefan, which was my biggest fear.
I wouldn't mind getting slapped by Javier. He's fucking hot, Marnie said.
That surprised a laugh out of all of us. Of course she went there. Damien approached our group, Murphy in tow. He looked a little weary as he eyed up our laughing group.
Why do my ears always burn when I see you all laughing like that? He asked.
Marnie held up her hands as though showing a good 10-inch measurement.
Don't worry, babe. It's all flattering.
Damien rubbed his temples, looking pained. Murphy nodded, rubbing his chin and looking impressed.
I knew it, he said.
I couldn't help it that it made me laugh harder.
Yeah, he has a big dick, but him running away after the sex kind of cancels that one out for me, personally,
Jessa said wryly. I was shocked. I hadn't known that Jessa and Damien had hooked up. Jessa never did the casual hookup thing, or so I'd thought. Marnie held up her hands, making a rather large circle with her fingers, clearly illustrating girth.
This right here is what makes up for the running away part.
Murphy cursed loudly. I fucking knew it. Marnie broke down in adorable giggles, clutching her stomach. Judith was right there with her. They high-fived. I felt a little sorry for Damien since he looked like he was in real pain, but I still couldn't stop laughing. Stefan walked up to us, shaking his head and smiling.
Poor Damien. What did he ever do to deserve such relentless teasing? Marnie answered, of course. He fucked too many of us and he was too good at it, that's what.
Speak for yourself, Jessa said. There was nothing too good about my experience. Size isn't everything.
Ouch, Murphy said, drawing out the sound. Burn.
Jessa shrugged. Not a burn, just stating facts.
Brutal, Murphy said.
I felt a light tap on my shoulder and turned to find Javier just behind me. He looked a little nervous as he bent to my ear.
Can we go somewhere and talk? He asked.
I studied him, wondering what was going on now, but I just nodded.
Sure. Where to?
I followed him to an empty section along the bar that attached to our VIP section. The bartender approached us instantly.
I'm fine, I told him. I'll take another of your house specials, Javier said.
I studied him. He looked a little glassy-eyed. I didn't think I'd ever seen Javier drunk before, but I suspected that I might be seeing it now.
I sat in one of the cushioned stools at the bar. He didn't sit, but moved close to me, leaning in to talk in a low voice.
I know you're worried about Stefan being with me. You think I'm not good enough for him. You think I'm trouble.
I opened my mouth to protest, even though most of what he said was somewhat true. But he continued in a rush.
I get it. I'm not trying to argue with you. I just wanted to clear some things up.
I nodded at him to go on.
You don't have to worry about me hurting him, Bianca. If anyone is going to get hurt here, it will be me. I haven't even gone out with a guy since he dumped me, and that was, what, over a year and a half ago? I pined for him, Bianca. I know he's too good for me. I know he's too good for everyone. Every guy I know has a crush on him. He's damn near perfect, and I am batshit crazy in love with him. I thank God every day that he stays with me. I wouldn't mess this up for anything.
I felt a relief at his words that threatened to floor me, but there were still some things that he needed to clear up.
What about the Vance nonsense? If he's been so awful to you, why on earth would you still be hanging out with him?
He winced. He wrote me a very long, drawn-out letter, talked about squashing our beef and moving on. For once, he sounded really sincere about it, and he and I were friends before we were a couple. He was a good friend, just a horrible boyfriend, and a worse ex. His letter had me thinking that we could go back to being casual friends. I wanted that because so many of the guys on his crew are friends of mine, and I'd like for it to be less awkward every time he and I are in the same room. It's been so long since we were together. I just don't understand why he hasn't gotten over it. Thinking that he finally had was just something I wanted to believe, I guess. It won't ever happen again. I'm so done with him.
I nodded. That seemed for the best. I only hoped he meant it.
It was like he read my mind.
I know you won't trust me right away. That's just not how you work. But I hope that you will eventually. I intend to prove myself. This is it for me, Bianca. Stefan is the real deal. And if he wants me, I'm sticking around.
He moved into me, wrapping his arms around me tightly. It should have been awkward since I was sitting and he was standing, but somehow we fit just right. I hugged him back.
I hope so, Javier. You know, the first time you guys went out, he came home with this dreamy look on his face. He was so happy. I know you think I haven't been a fan of yours, but I became a fan that night. There's nothing I love more than for Stefan to be with someone that makes him that happy. And you shouldn't downplay his feelings for you. He pined for you too, Javier. I know a lot of guys have a crush on him, but you're the only one he sees. Trust me on that. And I'll be eternally grateful to you for helping him see that he doesn't need to hide who he is anymore, or who he's with.
He squeezed me tighter. I hugged him back.
Javier laughed.
Look at Stefan, he said. Us hugging has made his day.
I pulled back to look. Stefan was across the lounge, standing next to Jessa, grinning at us like he'd just been granted a wish.
Javier toasted him with the dark red martini that the bartender had left for him on the bar while we'd been talking.
That looks tasty, I told him, pointing at his drink. His brows lifted.
Want me to order you one?
I shook my head. Alcohol doesn't really agree with me. I don't seem to have a spot between dead sober and crazy drunk.
He held the glass out to me. Just taste it. It's a black raspberry martini. It's Red's signature cocktail. It's my new favorite drink.
I took the glass from him, sniffing it. It smelled good.
What's in it? I asked, taking a very tiny sip and tasting it, a slightly bigger one.
Chambord, raspberry vodka, and blood orange juice.
It tastes awesome. What's Chambord?
Raspberry liqueur.
To die for, right? Best tasting drink ever.
I nodded.
So good.
I felt a hard body press against me from behind, and I stiffened. I handed Javier his drink.
How many of those have you had?
James purred in my ear. He dug a hand into my hair, gripping a tight handful of it into a fist. His other arm snaked around my waist from behind, gripping a hip in his hand. His tone was silky smooth, but I still heard the menace in it.
None, I told him calmly. Javier just let me have a taste of his.
Are you going to drink tonight?
He demanded. I hadn't been planning on it, but his tone and his attitude almost had me changing my mind.
I hadn't been planning on it, I said finally.
That's good, he said, smooth as silk. You know I don't care for alcohol, and I won't fuck you mindless when you've been drinking.
My eyes shot to Javier. James hadn't bothered to lower his voice, but the other man hadn't seemed to notice. James turned me in his arms, his hold unbreakable. He tilted my chin up until I had a clear look at his tarnished eyes.
Tell me something, he began in that silky tone. Is it romantic or psychotic when I say that I'll never let you leave me?
I studied him. I just couldn't tell if there was even a hint of humor to his words when he was in this mood.
I suppose that would depend on whether I'm trying to leave you or not. If I never tried, it's romantic. And if I ever did and you didn't let me, definitely psychotic.
Why are you trying to scare me, James?
My voice was steady and calm. I would cope with this. I would not run just because he was acting so strange.
His smile was a bitter twist to his pretty mouth. Didn't like it a bit. It spoke of secrets and fears.
I'm not trying to scare you, love. I mean to keep you. I'm just trying to gauge how badly you want to be kept.
I want you to tell me what's going on. Is it something to do with that conversation you had with Roger?
His brows shot up. So happy you asked about Roger. I just finished having a meeting with him, and he's dying to meet you, so he'll be here shortly. You'll like him. Very nice man.
I traced a finger down the smooth plane of his cheek. I rubbed at a spot there where it dimpled when he smiled.
So, you refuse to tell me? Is that how it's going to be with us? I asked him.
The mask he'd been maintaining slipped for an instant, giving me a glimpse into raw, desperate eyes.
No, Bianca. I want us to share everything. I mean that. Will you just give me time?
Will you stop acting like the world is about to fall down around us?
Yes, of course. If I know that you're devoted to me and devoted to us staying together, it will help immensely.
I've told you how I feel, but you can't make me depend on you so quickly, so desperately, and then close yourself off.
I can't take that, James. It raises all of my defenses, sets off all of my alarms when you act scared and secretive. He nodded.
Yes, I'm sorry. I've been on the edge with a crucial negotiation. It's a lose-lose type of scenario. I'll try not to take it home with me anymore.
Ah, here comes Roger. Roger was an attractive man, with slate-gray hair and a face that looked like it had been lined and weathered with smiles rather than frowns. He was a fit man, maybe in his early 50s. His smile was big and sincere as he approached us.
"Leave it to James to drag me clubbing in my 50s, he said by way of greeting.
I smiled at him. He held out a hand, and I pulled back far enough from James to shake it.
I'm Roger, an old friend of the family, and you're Bianca. I've heard so much about you. I begin to see why my young friend has turned over a new leaf.
His tone was rich and warm with sincerity. A waiter approached our group, looking nervous and anxious. James leveled a hard stare at him that made the waiter's anxiety understandable.
Mr. Cavendish, sir, Jeff, the manager, needs a moment of your time.
James watched the other man, his cold stare the epitome of intimidation.
Really? He needs my presence right now? Does he think that I'm here for business?
No, sir. He knows that you are here, socially. He said it was very important.
James smiled a sharp smile that was all perfect white teeth.
It was scary. Tell him I'll be with him momentarily.
He nodded at Roger, kissing my cheek roughly. He looked back, agitated, his jaw clenched.
If you'll both excuse me, I'll be back in a moment. This had better be good.
Chapter 18. Mr. Curious. We watched him stride away. Roger spoke when he was a good distance away.
Pardon my bluntness, Bianca, but are you at all aware of James's past?
I turned to look at him, meeting his eyes very steadily. What are you referring to exactly? He sighed, looking uncomfortable.
He was given into the care of a cousin of his shortly after his parents died. I fought this decision, fought it hard, but I was overturned by his family. I had no legal ability to protect him. I only have my suspicions about his guardian, and it really isn't my place to be telling you this, but in order to understand some of what James has done, I think you should know. I know all about Spencer, if that's what you're getting at.
Why are you telling me this?
He studied me. He told you about Spencer?
I nodded.
He looked startled. It's probably a very good sign that he shared something like that with you. The reason I bring it up, though, is that after he left Spencer's care, he became a different kid for a long time. He was wild and unruly. I barely knew him anymore. Whatever happened with his guardian, it affected him in a very negative way. I don't know if you know this, but he used to be quite promiscuous.
I felt my eyes harden as I looked at him. I'm well aware of that. Trust me when I say it's been brought to my attention many times.
So, you know how he used to be? Up until he met you,
he was a slut. Yes, I know. What's your point? I felt rude even as I said the words, but God, I was sick of this subject.
Well, I got the impression from James that he would be quite distraught if some things about his past were brought to light. I was led to believe that he feared that you would leave him if you knew about his former indiscretions, and that was why he was so upset about certain things being revealed. Do you know about his unorthodox preferences?
I sighed, thoroughly confused and so done with the conversation. Yes, I'm very aware, I said, trying not to blush as I kept his steady gaze. Something about the man was just so dignified.
I couldn't believe that I was as good as discussing my BDSM lifestyle with him.
His thick, dark eyebrows shot up. Well, that's a relief, though it doesn't exactly clear anything up for me. Again, pardon my bluntness, but perhaps you should let James know that his past won't scare you off.
Why? What is the point to all this? What's been going on with James?
He shot a glance behind me and looked particularly uncomfortable. I am not at liberty to say, he said absently.
Now you sound like a lawyer, I told him.
As I spoke, a firm hand descended to my nape.
That was quick, Roger told James, who was pressing himself tightly against my back.
It was nothing, James said dismissively. What have you two been chatting about? Why does he sound like a lawyer, love?
I turned to look at him. He shifted with me, not relinquishing the hand on my nape. What was the emergency? I asked with an arched brow.
His upper lip curled. There wasn't one. There was only a part-time manager in need of a demotion. Tell me what you were talking about.
That's a nosy question. Did you really demote someone for wasting 5 minutes of your time? He moved until he was standing close against me, pressing himself against my side. Even knowing that he was doing it to distract me, I was far from unaffected by his nearness.
I demoted him, and put him on probation pending termination, because he is managing one of the most profitable clubs in Manhattan, and he can't handle a simple wine shortage. Him wasting 5 minutes of my time only illuminated the facts for me.
Your turn.
What were you two talking about?
Roger cleared his throat.
Nothing important, James. I really do need to get going. I'll call you if I learn anything new.
Roger shook our hands, bowing his head politely before turning away.
I'll walk you out, Roger, James said to his back.
Roger waved him off.
No, that's fine. Get some time with Bianca. It's obvious that you don't get enough of that. Have a good night.
Are you going to tell me what you two talked about? James asked me as Roger strode out of sight. I shook my head. Why are you so curious? He moved into me, pressing his front against mine. He bent as though to kiss me.
I'm curious about everything you do, Bianca. What do I need to do to get you to tell me what he said to you?
I just shook my head at him. He let out a little growl in his throat, kissing me. It was an overwhelming, possessive kind of kiss. We were in public, in one of his clubs, but he didn't hold back. He sucked at my mouth, his hands moving to my butt to pull me hard against the proof of his desire. He rubbed against me like a cat. I purred. My hand curled into the lapels of his suit jacket, gripping desperately. He snaked one hand up into my hair, gripping it, then pulling it sharply enough to elicit one involuntary little moan. He pulled back just far enough to breathe against my mouth.
You're in the mood to get fucked against a wall tonight, aren't you?
He was kissing me again before I could respond, the hand on my ass moving to the back of my thigh, hitching it up so that he could grind right into me. He stopped abruptly, pulling back, but not away. My hips twisted against him before I registered that we weren't alone. Oh, yeah. We'd never been alone. We were in a club. He pulled back, grabbed my hand, and began to pull me.
We'll be right back, he called out to Stefan. We're just going to have a chat.
I didn't look at Stefan, didn't hear him respond. I was lost in a sensual haze, just putting one foot in front of the other, following him blindly. James had said something about fucking me against a wall. Yes, that sounded perfect. He led me out of the VIP lounge, down a long red hallway, and then another. He pulled me into a large office. There was a man behind the desk, typing on a computer. He looked startled at our entrance.
"Give us privacy," James told him, his voice sharp. The man beat a hasty retreat. James shut and locked the door behind him. Handy, that, a lock. He started loosening his tie. When it was untied, he hooked a finger into the hoop at my neck. He pushed my back to the wall, or rather, the door. He reached above my head, and I looked up. There was a coat hanger above me, hooked over the top of the tall door. James was tying his tie to it with swift, sure motions. He pulled my arms up and together, wrapping the tie around them, tying more swift knots around my wrists. This took longer, and I watched those skillful hands with rapt attention.
"This is going to get loud, Bianca. I'm going to fuck you so hard that you scream my name, and you are going to scream so loudly that nobody will doubt just why you're screaming. Would you like to tell me what you and Roger were talking about before I'm inside of you, or will this be a mid-fuck confession?"
I just shook my head again. He smiled a very troublesome smile. Mr. Cavendish was about to take the reins. He worked on his own clothing first, pulling his shirt out of his pants, then unbuttoning and spreading his slacks open. He pulled that delicious cock out slowly, tauntingly. He stroked himself while he watched me. He pulled the strapless side of my dress down, saw that I was wearing a strapless bra, and yanked that down too. He bent slightly and began to suck hard at my nipple while he slid his hands up my skirt and slipped my panties off. He straightened very slowly when he finished, leaning into me, pushing my leg up and thrusting into me hard with that same motion. I watched him, and I saw his cold smile when he elicited a sharp little gasp out of me. He pounded into me so hard and fast that it did wrench a little scream out of me, a scream that formed into a very long version of the word James. I was on that fine edge when he yanked out, his eyes intense and angry on me.
"Tell me what you and Roger talked about, Bianca," he ordered.
It took me long moments to gain any semblance of coherency. When I did, a spark of anger shot through me. "You can't use sex to control me, James. You shouldn't play with my heart like that." He laughed. It was sinister.
"Oh, love, it's not your heart I'm playing with, and I'll play with your body whenever I damn well please."
He moved back against me, and then he was driving roughly into me again.
"Don't even think about letting yourself come," he murmured to me in an almost offhanded way.
He jackhammered into me, so hard and so fast, again and again, for long moments before wrenching out of me again. I made a noise that sounded suspiciously like a scream of distress when he pulled out. He touched my bottom lip softly with an index finger.
"Tell me, Bianca, tell me what you talked about with Roger."
"You're being a bastard," I told him after a while. He just smiled that sinister smile and stroked my lips with his finger. "A sadistic bastard." He laughed.
"Yes, I am that. Just tell me what you talked about, Bianca, before this gets out of hand."
We had a long, silent standoff before I caved. I did it because I'd realized that it wasn't really that important, and because I didn't want to see how far he would go to prove a point just then. "We talked about you, James, about your past, about your promiscuity, your preferences. I think he just wanted to know what I knew. He seemed to think that you'd kept me in the dark about it all. I got the sense that he was afraid that something about your past was about to be leaked, and that it was something that would drive me away. Why did he think that, James? What's going on?"
He cursed fluently. "God damn, Roger. It's nothing, Bianca. It's being taken care of. Someone was threatening to be indiscreet about some of my exploits. I'm handling it. I've been agitated because I've been trying to distance myself from my past, to clean up my image, if you will, for your sake, for the sake of our future, and this leak would have the opposite effect. But, as I said, I'm handling it. Thank you for answering my question.
He moved against me. I spoke just as he was lining himself up at my entrance. It's not like I had a choice, I muttered sullenly. He thrust into me, bottoming out in one hard motion. I cried his name brokenly.
How about I make it up to you with a handful of orgasms?
I didn't answer. He already had me incoherent as he made good on his offer. He pounded into me relentlessly, one hand pulling my hair, the other rubbing my clit. He brought me over again and then again. He was merciless. I was completely wrung out by the time he let himself come with a rough groan, grinding deep inside of me, the hand in my hair moving to my chin. He gripped it hard as he watched me. He gave me one swift kiss before pulling out of me. He left me where I was, leaning against the door for support, my arms still tied when he moved to the desk. He cleaned us both as well as he could with just tissues. He kissed me deeply, but softly, a romantic kind of kiss, while he untied my wrists. He pulled me against him, supporting me while I regained my balance, massaging the feeling back into my wrists slowly and thoroughly.
I love you, Bianca, he said when he finally pulled back.
I love you too, James, but that doesn't give you a free pass.
No, it doesn't. Being your dom does that, love. I've compromised far more for you than I've ever done for anyone or anything in my life. Controlling you sexually is something that I won't be bending on. But I'm pretty sure you already knew that.
Chapter 19. Mr. Amenable. James was in a remarkably better mood as we returned to our group. We stayed for hours, laughing and joking with my friends. He was even friendly with Damien, though the man couldn't get within 6 feet of me without James grabbing handfuls of me to prove a point. Though, if I was fair, he rarely kept his hands off me when we were together, Damien or no. Damien, for his part, was giving James even less of a reason to be jealous than usual. He was distracted and quiet. He spent most of the night shooting Jessa baffled looks. I found that strangely encouraging. Maybe there was something there. It could have been that he just took it personal that she hadn't enjoyed their one-night stand, but I was hoping it was more than that. I caught a little snippet of their conversation as the night was winding down, when Damien had managed to corner Jessa just behind where we'd been standing and chatting with Murphy.
Hey, are we good?
Damien asked her, his voice worried.
We're fine, Jessa replied in a flat voice, sounding anything but fine. I feel like a jerk. I didn't know you felt that way. Frankly, I thought you'd forgotten about the whole thing since you never mentioned it. Don't worry about it, Damien. One unhappy customer out of 1,000 should hardly mess up your average.
He cursed. I couldn't help it. I glanced over at them. Damien's back was to me, but Jessa was facing me, and I saw her face clearly as she rolled her eyes.
I didn't know it was bad for you. It wasn't bad for me. In fact, it was pretty amazing. I'd like to make it up to you, if you'd let me. You could show me what you didn't like, help me work on my technique.
Jessa snorted loudly. Apparently, I wasn't the only one shamelessly eavesdropping. Murphy started swaying and singing, "Players gonna play." Here's the thing, Damien. It was a hell of a lot more than your technique that wasn't working out for me. The pining for a chick that's never gonna look at you twice thing was the biggest turnoff. The fact that you didn't bother to clue me in about your little hang-up before we hopped in the sack. I never do the casual sex thing, and the way you turned into a stranger the second we were done reminded me very clearly why. sex is not just a bodily function for me. I require some semblance of intimacy with the act, and you wouldn't know intimacy if it punched you in the face. I hear you've been celibate for the last few months, Jessa continued mercilessly, waiting for a chick that is never going to want you. You're not an idiot. You know she's not going to leave her drop-dead gorgeous so fucking hot that they look like they want to fuck each other in public billionaire boyfriend for you. It's just another crazy-ass way for you to avoid real feelings. The only way you could be good in bed for me would be if you became a complete person, not just some shell of a man that doesn't have a middle ground between putting women on a pedestal and degrading them with meaningless sex. Murphy clutched his chest, falling to his knees.
I felt that right here, my friend,
he called out to Damien, not even bothering to hide the fact that we'd all been shamelessly listening to the entire exchange.
How about we have this little chat in private? Damien said, his tone hard.
We all watched silently while he grabbed Jessa by the arm and led her resolutely away. She went easily enough, just muttering one loud, Neanderthal, as they walked away. I looked at James, who'd been silent throughout the exchange. Maybe those two will work things out and start dating, I said hopefully. James studied me.
Do you want that?
I sent him a baffled look. Of course I do. Damien needs to move on, and Jessa would be good for anybody. She's one of the most open and honest people I've ever met. Talking to her is like chatting with a really good therapist.
Nah, Murphy said, getting back up. Damien's pretty clear about what he likes from women. He likes to be ignored, not yelled at. She's not his type at all.
I gave my little shrug. Maybe he needs to find a new type. Murphy grinned.
Now wouldn't that be awesome?
Damien and Jessa never returned to the club, at least not before James and I left, and I took that as a very good sign. We made our rounds, saying goodbye to everyone at around 11. James was rather quiet but sweet on the short trip back to the apartment. He nuzzled into my neck, placing soft, sweet kisses there. It wasn't his usual style, but I still melted. He made love to me again before I sank into a deep and dreamless sleep. I was pleasantly surprised the next morning when I realized that he was traveling to Vegas with me that day. I'd known that he was planning to spend part of his week there with me, but we hadn't discussed when he was flying out. We got dressed together, holding hands quietly while we made our way down to the waiting car.
I discussed it with Stefan last night. You don't have to take the airport shuttle with the crew. It's at your lead's discretion, and he gave us the green light, so you can ride with me.
I just nodded. The flight went well. The whole day did, in fact. There was a brief moment of tension when James found out that, though I was taking the furlough, I would still be working my regular schedule for at least 2 more weeks. He didn't like that. I hadn't thought he would, but I wouldn't budge. This company gave me an invaluable opportunity that changed my life. That means a lot to me. They've asked us to stay on our schedules for 2 more weeks, and I won't bail early and mess up staffing in the meantime. I won't budge on this, James. My little speech was impassioned enough that he let it go pretty quickly for him. Even if he couldn't understand why I would have a feeling of loyalty towards a company that was on its way out, he at least respected it. That warmed me. He didn't always understand me, but I could have no doubts that he tried to. The next few days went like that. Every possible bump in the road gave us little resistance. He didn't complain when I had to work for most of Sunday, just kissed me a lingering goodbye with a murmured, I love you. Things were good between us. Good was putting it mildly. We were amazing together. Things became so easy, but that heat between us didn't cool for a moment. It became very clear to me just how perfect it could be between us if we just let it. It all felt so perfect, in fact, that I began to get a little paranoid, always waiting for that other shoe to drop. I told myself that life didn't just have to be a series of tragedies. Maybe I could just have this wonderful thing, no conditions. Maybe life would be blissfully smooth sailing from here on out. I wanted to believe it, but a sick tension never quite left my gut, and my nightmares were more persistent than ever. We stayed at his Vegas home that week, agreeing to stay at my little place on the next Vegas rotation. On Monday, we went out to dinner with the tattoo artist, Frankie. I was nervous. I knew I'd made a bad impression the first time we'd met, and I wanted to rectify that, but I didn't know the woman, so I wasn't sure how. We met her at a trendy restaurant in the Cavendish Hotel and Casino. I dressed Vegas casual, in a pretty white blouse, beige short shorts, and pumpkin orange heels. You could never show too much skin in Vegas, and the heels made the outfit just dressy enough that I could fit in anywhere. Frankie was warm and friendly, hugging us both and giving me a genuine smile right off the bat. I felt my tension ease. She was going to make it easy on me. Frankie was wearing a tight gray t-shirt that was torn so short at the bottom that I got a good look at some of her underboob. Her cut-off jean shorts weren't much more decent. Her ink-covered skin was well displayed in all its glory. She caught me looking and smiled. My reality show is shooting. The producers love to see the ink. I swear they talk me into less and less clothing every season. Next season they might just get me to walk around naked. I smiled back at her. She had a very nice smile. Her makeup was dark, her lips nearly black. Her look was harsh, but managed not to detract from her pretty face. With that endearing smile, she was actually kind of adorable. With her corkscrew black curls, she kind of looked like a grown-up goth Shirley Temple. We hit it off with no problems. Frankie wasn't at all what I'd been worried she would be. I began to see why she and James got along so well. She laid the charm on thick, add that to her undeniable charisma, and I saw easily why she had her own reality show. I didn't like reality shows. I never saw the appeal of watching people that I didn't like or respect make fools of themselves, but I would have bet that I'd like Frankie's show. "What would I have to do to get you on my table, Bianca?" Frankie asked with a charming smile after we'd been chatting for a solid hour. James made a disapproving noise, and I glanced at him. He was shooting an annoyed look in the other woman's direction.
"Don't hit on my girl, Frankie."
She raised her hands in a show of innocence, laughing. She was clearly unaffected by his jealousy.
"I wouldn't, James. You've got it all wrong. I just think she'd look lovely with some ink on that perfect skin of hers."
James looked far from appeased by that.
"Knock it off, Frankie."
She waved him off.
"Oh, chill out, James. I'm really not. I have a girlfriend now, and I've never been happier. Just let me have some fun."
I saw his eyes move to somewhere behind Frankie. My gaze followed his. A huge man strode toward us. He was several tables away, but I could tell from that purposeful stride and his intense stare that he was headed our way. He looked sinister and sexy. He had pitch-black hair that hung straight to his massive shoulders. He was so big that I would have pegged him for a football player or some kind of professional athlete if it weren't for the way he dressed. He wore a white t-shirt with what looked like some brand's logo on the front of it. It was so tight that I could see every ridge in his six-pack and every bit of the extensive tattoos that covered his chest. His jeans looked like he'd been in a war zone, they were so torn up. His arms were covered in full-sleeve tattoos. I thought that he must work in Frankie's tattoo parlor since he was so inked up. As he drew closer, I saw that his hard jaw had a 5 o'clock shadow that looked like it never went away. He had even features, with thick brows over thickly lashed eyes, a straight, rounded nose, and a mouth made for sin. He was a handsome devil. He grinned as he drew close to us, flashing twin dimples that were pure trouble. James cursed.
"What the hell is he doing here?"
he asked Frankie. He sounded very put out. Frankie turned to see who he was talking about, but had the opposite reaction when she saw who approached. She grinned. "Tristan is getting a new tat today. Of course, my producer just had to catch it for the show. They love it when celebrities come into the shop. Your episode is airing in 2 weeks, by the way." Of course he'd made an exhibition out of the tattoos, I thought, as my mind connected the dots. I didn't have time to address the issue, however, before Tristan was on us. His eyes were all on me as he reached our table. They were golden and twinkling, disarming, really. I smiled back tentatively, clued into a strange tension from James. Tristan sat at the only empty chair at the table, sliding it until he was sitting almost too close to me. His eyes were warm on me.
"The infamous Bianca. I have to say, I've been looking forward to meeting you. James and I go way back. I'm Tristan."
He held out his hand to shake, and I did automatically. James sucked in a gasp when Tristan raised my hand to his mouth, and he was wrenching my hand out of the other man's grasp before I could react.
"Watch yourself, Tristan," James said through gritted teeth.
Tristan just grinned that sinister grin with those troublesome dimples.
"Relax, Cavendish. I know she's yours. I was just saying hi." "Yeah, well, if you say hi again, I'm going to break your nose." "I'd love to see you try, but I'd really hate to make you ruin your manicure."
I turned to James, giving him a stern look, and completely ignoring the other man. I rubbed his chest until he looked at me. I didn't say a word, just watched him, willing him to calm, to keep from escalating a small confrontation into something out of hand. After a long moment, he relaxed a fraction, pulling me until I was plastered against his side. It was a while before I looked back at Tristan. He was a strange one, I thought, as he studied us intently, his brow furrowed.
"Someone told me you'd fallen over the deep end, but I just didn't believe it. I stand corrected. You've got it bad, my friend."
"What are you getting a tattoo of?" I asked Tristan, trying to find a neutral topic for the hostile men. I looked at him as I asked the question.
"I'm getting a small 5 to commemorate 5 years clean and sober," he said without hesitation, as though he'd practiced it.
I blinked. "Congratulations," I told him, meaning it. Addiction was a horrible, powerful thing. I'd seen people ruined by it.
"Thank you. I did some bad things when I was using, things I can't make up for, but having 5 years of sobriety under my belt still feels pretty damn good."
Frankie smacked herself in the forehead. It was an attention-getter. We all looked at her. "You can't say that without adding a disclaimer about all of your sins," she chided him. "You have every right to be proud of yourself." He shrugged, frowning harshly. He was a tough-looking guy, but somehow that frown made him look vulnerable rather than mean.
"I don't see it that way. Even with all of the touchy-feely rehab bullshit, I still know that it was me doing all those things, not the alcohol or the drugs. And there are some things a person can't just forgive themselves for, especially when the one I hurt the most can't forgive me either."
Frankie cursed, pointing at him. I could tell just from the last 2 minutes that these two had a tough love kind of relationship, but a close one.
"I'm calling your therapist just because you said that. You're supposed to be past that by now, and the fact that you aren't says you need to start seeing her more."
Tristan ignored her, turning to address me. He had that kind of intense regard that it was difficult not to return. He reminded me of a certain billionaire I knew. He waved a hand between James and me. It was a strangely elegant gesture for such a huge man.
"I used to have what you guys have. I found a sub once that suited me so perfectly."
I felt a little shocked at his words, referring to our lifestyle so casually and including himself in that life with a few words. I remembered that James had described Frankie as a dom as well. I wondered if they had their own club. Did they meet up once a week for coffee? The whole thing seemed surreal.
All of this other shit I do is just a cheap imitation of that, he continued. She was so exquisite.
What happened? I asked him. He bit his lush bottom lip. I thought that everything the man did came off sinful.
What else? He asked bitterly. I fucked it up. I pushed her so hard that I drove her away. If I'm honest, I pushed her away on purpose. Things were getting too intimate, and I couldn't have that. I was the same as every other addict. Being self-destructive used to be a way of life for me.
He looked at James. How's Danica? She's been doing all right? James sighed, and I studied him as he answered.
She's good, as far as I can tell. She's great at her job. I'm actually putting her in charge of all my galleries, not just the West Coast ones. Beth in New York will have a fit being under her, but I've decided that I need to work less and live more, so my best managers are being promoted in a hurry.
You should call her, Tristan. I know you worry about her, so just call her. See for yourself how she's doing. Tristan let out a frustrated breath.
You think I haven't tried calling her? I keep tabs on her. That's it. I need to know she's okay, but the woman will have nothing to do with me. Have you tried calling her lately? You know Danica. She won't change her mind. If you contacted her with something other than a casual fuck on your mind and used that annoying persistence of yours, I wouldn't be surprised if she gave you another shot, James said, his tone idle.
Tristan's eyes sharpened on him with a laser focus that reminded me so much of James.
Why do you think that? Has she said something to you?
James shrugged and grimaced, the arm around my shoulder jostling me with the movement.
She's just, I don't know, missing something. She's too reserved, too controlled, too damn disinterested about every part of her life except for work. And she works too much. I know from personal experience that if you make good money and still get the urge to spend the majority of your life working, it's because something important is missing there.
Tristan looked very raw as he studied the other man, his golden eyes holding a familiar sort of tarnish that spoke of pain, but that I found beautiful.
Is she seeing anyone? He asked finally, the words sounding like they'd been torn out of him against his will.
James sighed.
I'm not sure. She was a few months back. I'm not sure how serious it was or if he's still around. She doesn't go out of her way to mention her personal life, and I'm not asking. I just saw him stop by the gallery when I was visiting on business.
They're meeting with her tomorrow. Bianca is having a gallery show in L.A. Frankie spoke up suddenly. They haven't set a date for it yet, but I know I'll be attending. You should come as my date, Tristan.
He gave her a wry smile. Your little Latin fireball of a sub would scratch my eyes out for that.
So, we'll make it a threesome. She won't mind that. She might like it a little bit too much, in fact. Frankie addressed me, pointing at Tristan. He's my straight detector. If I'm lucky enough to turn one gay, he flips her straight again. Bastard. That surprised a loud laugh out of me. Tristan shrugged and flashed a dimple at her.
Just here to help.
Chapter 20. Mr. Playful. We lingered over dinner with the strange pair. Tristan ordered food even though we'd already finished eating. He made himself right at home without asking, joking and talking to Frankie and me. I liked him. A lot. I liked them both. They were fun. James was quiet and a little tense at my back, but he made no move to leave. When we did finally leave after hours of talking, Frankie gave me a big hug. Tristan tried to as well, but James was there to block him, not even trying to be subtle about it. Tristan was unfazed. He grinned that wicked grin at me, inkling his head.
"It was a pleasure to meet you, Bianca. You are an absolute delight. I'll be seeing you."
James didn't speak until we were in the back of his limo driving home.
"You liked him," he said, his tone bland, but I didn't believe that tone for a second.
"I like them both," I said, rubbing his arm. "Your friends are very nice. It's nice to see that you have some more good ones. They're starting to outnumber all of the evil bitches I keep meeting that you feel the need to sleep with." He completely ignored the last part of my statement, still focusing on Tristan.
"He's a dom, as I'm sure you picked up. Purely BD without the SM. You were attracted to him."
"Uh-oh." "Well, I'm in love with you. I like him, just like I said, as a friend. He's an attractive man, I can't deny that, but that's it, James. You can't think that every dom I meet is going to have some impossible pull on me just because you did." And it was actually that easy. A few reassurances, and he relaxed back into his smiling, amenable persona. I thought that boded well for us. The little things were already resolving themselves with ease. We met Danica at the tourist gallery of the Cavendish Hotel and Casino the next morning. Danica managed both the L.A. and Vegas galleries, which was especially impressive since she looked to still be in her early to mid-20s. With all of the talk the night before, my mind started trying to pair Danica and the physically imposing Tristan up the moment I saw her, and it was almost disconcerting to picture the two of them together. He was so massive and muscular that he could have been an MMA fighter. She, on the other hand, was the epitome of delicate grace. She was maybe 5'7", with smooth, straight, pitch-black hair that fell to her mid-back. She was thin, but she definitely had curves in all the right places. She had a pale complexion, but her heritage was very obviously mixed. Part of the mix was Asian, but the rest was anybody's guess. At least part Caucasian by her clear gray eyes. Tristan had been right. No one could deny that she was exquisite. She was dressed for business in a pencil skirt and a tidy dress shirt with the sleeves rolled up. She wore flats, I realized, as she stepped out from behind the podium as we approached. I would have pegged her as a stiletto girl just because she was so painfully poised. I saw in an instant why she didn't, though. She had just the slightest hitch to her step as she approached us with a lovely smile. Some old injury, I guessed. It was the most graceful limp I'd ever seen, as though she'd just absorbed the injury and made it a part of her, neither emphasizing or hiding it. That seemingly effortless gait told me a lot about the woman. She looked delicate, but there was a steel in her.
"So nice to finally meet you, Bianca. I've been privileged to get the distinguished honor of being your first big fan. More will come, though, I can assure you."
"Hey now," James said, shaking her hand with a smile. "Don't discount my adoration of her work. Remember who discovered her."
She inclined her head. "Touché, James. Please, follow me. We have a lot to discuss." We sat at a large conference room at the back of the Swank Gallery. Danica pulled out a huge leather binder, and I only realized that it was a portfolio of my work when she flipped it open.
"Let me start by saying that art is my life, and I simply adore your work. It is, however, a rather eclectic mix of paintings. This can be handled in a number of ways. My personal preference would be to divide all of the different themes by rooms, since we have so many paintings to work with, and we will be utilizing every room in the LA space for the showing."
I nodded. "That sounds good." She looked a little nonplussed, as though she'd been expecting an argument. "Well, that was easy. If all of the issues are that easy to resolve, we can schedule a showing for next week."
The entire meeting went similarly. Danica had very helpful suggestions about all of the things I needed to green light for the showing, and I was more than happy to defer to her expertise on something that I was a complete novice at. She was swift and professional, covering details that I hadn't even considered until she was satisfied that she had the showing thoroughly mapped out. James stayed reasonably silent through the meeting, which I appreciated. If he had taken over, as he did with so many things, it wouldn't have felt like it was mine. But working with Danica, seeing every step in the process without his interference, it began to feel real. Like I had a career here instead of a hobby that was being funded by my rich boyfriend. We went to lunch with Danica after we finished. Sandra, the assistant manager of the Vegas gallery who worked directly under Danica, joined us. She was a small brown-haired woman with brown eyes and a rather austere demeanor. If I had to guess, I'd have said she was in her late 30s. I'd completely forgotten about Danica's limp until she was moving away from the table to use the restroom. Sandra murmured something about needing to check on the gallery, scurrying off. "What happened to Danica's foot?" I asked James.
"It's her knee, I believe, and I don't know. She never talks about it, but I've gotten the distinct impression that it was somehow Tristan's fault."
I frowned. That sounded beyond ominous. We wrapped up a productive and pleasant morning with Danica, setting up a date the following week when she swore she'd be well into the thick of planning the showing. I was excited and elated when we parted. The crazy dream that was my painting career felt like it was shaping into something real and substantial. James gave the staff at his house the afternoon off, and we spent hours swimming in his ridiculous pool. The thing was obnoxious, with fake mountains and fountains and four different pools, and, yes, a grotto underneath one of the falls. "I didn't realize we were staying at the Playboy Mansion," I teased him. He grimaced.
"This is actually part of the house that I did not design. It's a long story, but I delegated this part of the design to my casino team, and since they knew I'd have to have some promotional parties here, this is what they did. I was not too happy when I saw it, but it has served its purpose. If I'm out of town and the casino needs to throw a pool party for some bigwigs, they do it here."
I wrinkled my nose at him. I knew the Vegas scene well enough, even if it wasn't really my scene. "I hope everything's been disinfected." He tapped my nose.
"Yes, of course. You know it drives me crazy when you do that with your nose. It makes you look so damn cute."
I tapped his nose. "Don't call me cute," I told him. His nostrils flared, rather sexily, I thought. I was lying on a cushioned lounger in a white bikini I wouldn't be caught dead wearing in public, while he rubbed sunblock all over my body. He was not efficient about the process, rubbing more of the parts inside of the tiny bikini than out of it, and grinning the entire time. "You don't have to work at all today?" I asked him. He'd worked the day before, but made no mention of going in that day.
"I'm taking a day off. I want to fuck you in the broad daylight. I want to spread you out and strip you bare under the sun."
That made me squirm in my seat. I'd had my hopes when he was dismissing his staff, but now it was certain we weren't just out here to swim. "You're going to get me sunburned in some painful places," I predicted. He held up the bottle of sunblock he was using.
"I've got it covered. Come on now, you know me better."
He was thorough, but slow as molasses as he covered me in the stuff. He spent extra time on my feet, rubbing and kneading until I moaned in pleasure. He was good with his hands in every way imaginable. The second leisurely rubbed-on coat of sunblock was completely unnecessary, of course, but he did it all the same.
only James could turn sun protection into foreplay. I was writhing before he made it back up to my inner thighs. His sunblock-coated fingers teased around my sex, fingering my tiny string bikini bottoms, but he pulled them back with a wicked little smile.
"For external use only, love. Guess you'll have to settle for my tongue."
He pulled the strings on both of my hips loose with his teeth. I buried my hands in his hair as he buried his face between my legs. It wasn't his usual oral technique, avoiding my clit at first to thrust his tongue as deep inside of me as it would go. It felt drugging. It felt good. But when he finally moved up to my clit and sucked with a vengeance, I came hard, gasping his name. He moved up my body in a flash, untying my top and moving my leg across his torso, positioning it diagonally with my ankle on his shoulder, turning me on my side and straddling my other leg.